and strength I am going to need. I am Yada. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio and to the Shabbat program this evening. We also have Larry with us. JB is attending to family this evening. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Yada.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's
long you. Time no talk to.
Yeah, since Shattering Myths today. Let me tell you, I began with a bit of an introduction. There are two topics that I really don't like talking about. And, well, no, I'm not asking for anybody's sympathy here. I want to tell you that I do both programs principally because I enjoy doing them. There's satisfaction at knowing that more people are learning who not to trust and who to trust. And so I enjoy that. I enjoy the camaraderie and being, you know, playing a role, whatever it, you know, value it might have. But my understanding of the covenant is that we as Yah's children have very few responsibilities, and we have essentially unlimited opportunities, that Yah was responsible. I'm not. Yah was the right example. I'm not. Yah was trustworthy. I'm not. The promises are from Yahweh, not me. And so I've just taken the approach of, I'm going to do the best I can. I may say some things that are stupid. I may say a lot of things that are wrong and may have to correct them. But basically, I do this as part of the family because I enjoy sharing what I've learned in the family. That said, there's two things that I don't like doing. And when this program or the Shattering Myths program, and I'm going to lay this out because I want everybody to know I'm pretty sensitive to what we're going to talk about tonight. When this program or the Shattering Myths program ceases to be fun, enjoyable in that regard, I'm just not going to do it anymore. And I'm not saying that to dissuade any subject being brought up or any question. I'm just saying that there's lots of things that I can do with the same amount of time that I find great pleasure in doing that I think also have merit, like researching and writing, which I do a lot less of these days, and I miss it a lot. All right, so what are the two subjects I don't like talking about? One of those subjects is, and many of you probably already guessed it, the timing of the Mikra. You know, I've done my best to understand what I think is Yah's timing, about what is the first month of the year, how you determine it. I have my view of what qualifies as observational and astronomical, and how both can be blended together. I've done my best to share them with you, including the length of the Feast of Unyeasted Bread. And I know there's lots of people with very strong convictions that disagree. And I don't think the subject is knowable. I don't think God gave us that. I'm positive that God did not give us enough information to be certain. So I don't want to get into debate with somebody because all I've got is these were the conclusions that I found as I studied his testimony. And if you have different conclusions and want to celebrate them on different dates, I don't want to argue with you on it. Okay? So that's one. The other is the one that Larry has encouraged me to discuss with you this evening, which is specifically the dietary, and I'm not going to use laws. I know that's the most common term for them. But the dietary instructions, the dietary rules in the Torah. I have never said, nor has Larry ever said, that we should disregard what God has instructed. I have never said, nor Larry has never said, that we serve as an example that others should follow. I have never said, Larry has never said, that we are perfect. Neither of us have ever said that our interpretations are the only ones that matter, or the only ones that count. My view on the difference between the Torah's instruction of what is good to eat and not good to eat is that from every one of them we can learn something, but there are several of them, even as it relates to these very simple instructions, which only appear twice, which we just simply cannot do. And I'm going to share why we can't do it with you in a moment. Typically, my response is there are hundreds of instructions in the Torah that cannot be done by any of us today. I have chosen to look at everything in the Torah as an instruction we can learn from, and I have never been disappointed. Every instruction in the Torah, I have found something that is enlightening. But I find lots of instructions in the Torah that I just flat out cannot do, including what we're going to find, and I only translated today between the two shows. It's all the time I had. I'm a very slow translator. I'm not gifted at this. I enjoy it, but I'm slow. I only translated 8 verses. I'm going to share those 8 verses with you because I think there are things we can learn from them, and I haven't really even thought through the consequences. I did this without writing any insights, and so we're going to go through them, and together we're going to see what insights we can learn. But there's at least 2 of them, and probably 3 of them, that we can't do. All right, before we get into the food laws and whether or not the approach that that we have collectively gleaned from Dodd is accurate, which is that the Torah was given to us as the most valuable gift in the world to guide us into the covenant relationship, to guide us into knowledge of who Yahweh is, to introduce us to Yahweh, to teach us what we need to know to make rational and reasonable decisions regarding Yahweh and His covenant, for us to be able to know how to respond to one another, how to nourish one another, how to teach one another, how to guide one another, just how to behave with around one another, and what things we should encourage, like observing, closely examining, carefully considering Yahweh's testimony, and what things we shouldn't do, engage in religion or politics. That is what the Torah represents. Now, there are those, and I understand there are many people, who prefer clear, concise instructions. They prefer being directed. Some even like to be told what to do. I'm going to give you 2 races here. Now, this is not everyone in these 2 races falls into that category, but I married a German. My wife loves rules. She just loves rules. I mean, if there's a stop sign in a parking lot, and I run through it because I can see there's nobody around, and I don't stop at it, knowing that it's not a law to stop at a stop sign in a private parking lot, my wife will say, "Why did you break the rule?" She loves rules. I don't like rules.
That's a big club you're in, or at least the same club I'm in.
Yeah, I just hate rules. I'm just not good with rules. I rebel against rules. So I have, Larry, told people as part of this program 1,000 times that I come at this with my own prejudices. I've tried not to come at it with my own perspective. I've tried to, wherever possible and to the greatest extent possible, accept Yahweh's perspective. But I don't see, the God that I see in the Torah is not a rule-making God. He is not a cosmic killjoy that says you should do this and you shouldn't do that and you can't do this and don't go over there. You can go over here. I just don't see him that way. Is there a possibility that I'm wrong? Yes. But that's not the perspective I get from the Torah. Now, just because Germans and Japanese have a tendency to like to follow rules. There's both, you know, the wolves, for example, is my favorite animal. In the wolf pack, there is an alpha and an omega. You can't tell the alpha what to do. If you have an alpha wolf, you've got a 0% chance of influencing. And the omega wants to follow. It's submissive. So there are, I understand how different people could feel a very comfortable with a heavenly father whose instructions you think need to be followed in the sense of kept, in the sense of these are rules. He's I don't want to step outside the lines, and so I'm going to do everything that I possibly can that he says. And I understand there's a lot of people that are comfortable with that. They see a father relationship that way. I don't. They're the kind of people that would you give them a color book and a set of crayons, they are going to color within the lines. I'm not. That doesn't make the other person worse or me better. Just makes us different, and I think God celebrates difference. So I come at it from that point of view. There are many people who are so enamored with the idea of choice and with adventure. Now, this, Larry, you may share this trait. I'm going to tell you that all of my life, I have loved going right to the edge. I've loved going to the place where I know there is danger. I've loved exploring, not knowing what's around the next bend, even knowing that there might be something that could cause me harm around the next bend, but I just love getting in a situation where the adrenaline is pumping, where you're exposed to something new, and you have a chance to think your way out of danger. I like it. That to me is what adventure is. You know, you men going out
that's
to sea.
That's when you're the most alive.
Yeah,
that's
when people go out to
alive.
Sea to explore
I used
new
to be
world.
Recorded.
Right.
When I spoke, and that's when I was definitely at my best.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. You go in front of a large crowd of people to share an idea that you're committed to, knowing that, man, you could absolutely fall on your face, or when you're doing a talk radio show and you're encouraging people to call in. And somebody could call in with a question where you just don't even have an understanding of the basis of the subject, and you're always an inch from saying something stupid and making a fool of yourself. I happen to like that. So it's a very different personality. Now, there were some hurt feelings this week, not with me, but there were individuals this week who were part of the covenant family who said things to one another that were offensive, and some hairs were ruffled, let's say. Now, one of the comments that I think, and I have never been to this particular site where this exchange took place, so I'm going to speak of it in third person, and but I want to just set the scene, then I want to move on and go through what I know about the food instructions. In this program a week ago, I asked Larry if he occasionally had pepperoni on his pizza, if he occasionally had a BLT, if he occasionally had baby back ribs. And he answered in the affirmative. He didn't say, he made a regular habit of it. He did not say that you should follow his example. It's just that
I own a pork factory or brought the first pigs into this land either.
No. All you said is that, yeah, occasionally I do eat this. And the the purpose for that question was that Dode in the 119th Psalms makes it very clear, and what we know of Dode in the writings makes it even more abundantly clear, that Dode did not earn Yahweh's love because he obeyed Yahweh's instructions. I don't know how much wild boar that Dode may have eaten. I don't know if he ate any. But the things that Dode did in his life that by any rational standard were almost infinitely worse, according to the Torah's instructions, than having a shrimp cocktail. He was the ultimate bad boy in that regard. I don't think there's anyone depicted in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that has more blights on his resume than Dode. And yet Dode was absolutely assured of his place in the covenant, and in, therefore in heaven. So the point is that it isn't by obedience to rules that we're invited into Yahweh's family and therefore saved. It is by our response to the covenant and to its terms and conditions as they are articulated in the Torah and our attendance at Yahweh's festival feasts. So the only point I was trying to make is that, Larry, you're not perfect. There are choices you make.
Say it is so.
Yeah, it's
say
true.
It
you
is
aren't
so.
Perfect. You're not perfect.
You know.
And I know that because I myself am perfect.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to get around usery. How do I get around those usery instructions and the mixing the seeds and so forth that have to be done every day to survive in this Babylonian system?
So here we are, trying to emphasize that there are instructions associated with wild boars that we can learn a lot from, and that my emphasis has been consistent with Dode's emphasis that the preeminent responsibility that we have as members of Yahweh's covenant family is to listen to and observe what God has to say, to come to know what he said, understand it, and respond appropriately to it. But the more that we understand, the more effective we can be as witnesses. And my understanding of the, you know, you probably ought not eat wild boar, is that it's a nasty animal. It is an animal that is most associated with the first son of the sun, of Nimrod. It is the very animal that became the impetus for creating the religion and the counterfeit whose legacy was not only the Babylonian religion but also the Egyptian religion, the Greek religion, the Roman religion, and the religion of Christianity. Wild boar is what attacked and killed Nimrod. Nimrod is from Ninus, meaning sun, and he was presented as the son of the sun, with the sun rays impregnating Semiramis, who became Astarte, creating the Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, and the Son of God, along with the Father, who was the Son, for the religious and pagan trinity. And so I looked at Don't Eat the Wild Boar from that perspective, and also a wild boar, a swine, not only rolls around in the mud, but will even eat its own feces. I mean, it is a disgusting animal, and that for nearly 6,000 years. I think if you were to shave 50 years off 6,000 years, eating the flesh of a boar was among the most dangerous things you could do because of all the parasites that were associated with this really filthy animal. So you wallow in the mud, you're going to get dirty. You ingest things that are unhealthy, and you're going to get sick. You ascribe to the impetus of the religious myth that gave way to the pagan trinity, and you're going to die. That's what I learned from it. That's what was meaningful to me. Occasionally having a BLT isn't meaningful to me. Now,
one other thing I would add here, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The name, Jesus. Seuss is a pig. Don't eat that.
Yeah, you know? It's kind of funny. Yep. Okay.
Well,
yeah,
it's true. Right
yeah.
there to
yeah.
this
yeah.
day in Greece, yeah. they'll call Seuss a pig.
Yeah, Seuss is a pig, yeah. Okay, let's go on. Dode did not have a religion. Dode is who he is because he for a lot of reasons. One is his intellectual curiosity, his capacity to understand, and his passion for the testimony and inspiration of Yahweh. So here's the guy that understood Yahweh better than any human who's ever lived, who had a greater affinity for Yahweh's teachings than anybody who ever lived, who was the single most inspired prophet who ever lived. And yet, he did not feel constrained to have his behavior match rules in the Torah. That tells me a lot. And it also, I also know God's response to him, which is, I love this dude. He did not have a religion. But let me tell you something, there's something really interesting about Dode that we don't think about very often. And I don't think I really understood it until this morning, and I was agonizing over this topic for today. And that is that Yahweh, when he returns, says that he's going to reestablish the kingdom of Dode. Why would he say that? The kingdom of Dode. I mean, this was a pretty cruddy, flawed guy. Why would he establish the kingdom of Dode? I mean, I can see establishing the kingdom of Yahudah, the kingdom of Yisrael, the kingdom of Yahweh, the kingdom of the Bereth, the covenant, the kingdom of the Torah. But the kingdom of Dode? And then it dawned on me. The Hebrew word for king and kingdom, it's melech. You know what it's based on? Malach.
Yeah, messenger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the correlation between the two? Do you have any idea why in Hebrew melech is the term for an authority? Because the authority is free to say and do anything they want. There's no one that can punish or hold the authority accountable for whatever they wish to say. In a kingdom, which is typically a dictatorship, in a kingdom, the king has the most liberty to say and do what he wants. Just as the messengers are liberated, and we as Yah's messengers are liberated, and we're free. Beyond that, in eternity, when we are adopted by Yah, what does that make us?
That makes us family.
And?
Sons and daughters.
And?
Relatives.
And?
And free to do what we want.
No, and royalty. God's the King of Kings. He is the ultimate authority. The universe is his kingdom. As his children, we are royalty. There's a lot of places in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms that speak about us being royalty. And so this millennial kingdom on earth is a time where the covenant children, like Dode, are kings. We're royalty. This is an extraordinary guy, but he did not have a religion. And the thing that makes Dode unique is that he is one of only three people that told us how we ought to observe the Torah. There's only three. In all of human history, there's only three people that were inspired to show us, to tell us, how to observe the Torah.
That would be Dode, Moshe, and Abraham?
Nope, but close. Two out of three, man. You'd be a Hall of Famer. All right, Moshe is the first. Okay, when does Moshe tell us how to observe the Torah?
Well, just right off the bat.
Nope.
You know, when
he doesn't. Nope. In fact, only in his last time at Bath. Barishit, then Shemot the names, and Kara called out. Bar Midbar in the wilderness. Yahweh speaks in first person. Yahweh is not explaining how to observe the Torah. He's just sharing the Torah. Now, in Dabarim is at once I was trying to figure out how could Dabarim be so different than the first four books of the Torah. You know, the first four books of the Torah, Yahweh speaking in first person. Dabarim is Moshe speaking in first person. And then it just dawned on me that the whole notion of God revealing his Torah to us is for us who have read it, thought about it, to share how to apply it to our lives, what we should think about, what we should focus on, what does it mean to us. And in Dabarim, that's what Moshe is doing. He's saying, okay, we've all heard the Torah. Let's talk about the important parts of this instruction. Did Moshe and go back and tell us, you know, what I think we ought to emphasize here is the census in the book of Bamidbar. So I'm here to tell you now that I'd like to take the next hour and speak about the census. No. But he did absolutely talk about how can you tell if something is consistent with the Torah and inspired by Yahweh as the Torah is, and somebody else that comes along and says something that is contrary to it, and how do you know that that they weren't inspired? You know, he talked about how
wrong.
Yeah, how do we observe the Moed Mikra? That's in the recap. The summation that Hero Yisrael, Yahweh, our God, Yahweh is one. I mean, profound summary ideas. He went back through each of the 10 statements and reiterated them. The profound importance things made Dabarim, and so that's Moshe explaining to us what's really important in the Torah. Now, the next person who explained the Torah, of course, is Dod. He wrote probably 10 times more on how to observe the Torah than did Moshe. So if you want to say who is the single most important person in terms of how to observe the Torah, it'd be Dod. And as we're learning in the 119th Psalm, it's all about reading, listening, understanding, processing, concluding, knowing, and responding. There are very few do's, and the few do's are almost exclusively Yahweh did, or once we come to know and understand, then we're in a position to respond. All right, so who's the third individual who demonstrated how we are to observe the Torah? Yahusha, the living embodiment of the Torah. And so you can look at Yahusha's life and listen to his words, and you can say from Yahusha's example, what's important? You find Yahusha observing, for example, the Moed Mikra. You find Yahusha citing, quoting, answering questions with the Torah prophets and Psalms. You see Yahusha keeping the Shabbat.
Yep.
Other than the Pesach lamb and the unyeasted bread, and there's one discussion of some multiplication of some fish, but it's not fish that we have any indication that Yosha himself ate. Is there any part of Yosha's diet that is delineated for us in the witness writings?
No.
No. So not him really. Telling us that this is what it's okay to eat and this is what's not okay to eat, he didn't go through that, did he? Now, he
did say something
that we want to be really cognizant of. He did begin his testimony saying that anybody who goes and annuls, does away with any aspect of the Torah, they're going to be called lowly and little in the kingdom of heaven. Now, and you might say that what he was talking about was the food laws. I have a hunch that's not what was the burning issue at the moment. I think because he brings it right back to the wolf in sheep's clothing, the Torahless one, that he was talking about somebody that would repudiate much of the Torah, including
circumcision.
And the Moed
Mikri.
Whole nine yards. I have a hunch that's what he was talking about. But, you are free to interpret that differently if you wish. All right, so that said, let's... I have one other bit of introduction before we get into the first eight statements on the dietary instructions. If I were to ask you, what is the primary justification in Judaism for the Talmud and the Mishnah, the oral law? If I were to ask you the question, if when rabbinical Jews are asked to justify the addition of their oral law, their Talmud and Mishnah, what do most Jews answer? And by the way, the answer is probably 90%+ of the time. They will give this one answer as the reason that their oral laws must exist. Okay, got your tongue?
You got me. You got me. I
all right. And by the way, anybody who doubts what I'm saying right now, just Google food laws and Torah. And what you'll find is that every article written by a Jew will say exactly the same thing, is that according to Jews, it is impossible to be kosher without the Talmud and oral law and Mishnah's explanations. That God does not provide enough information on diet for people to be able to rely on the Torah alone.
Okay.
And so the reason that the Talmud and Mishnah must exist is to explain
to
legislate what God actually meant by being kosher. That's their explanation. So it's turning God's advice on what's you should eat and shouldn't eat into a set of laws that has to be obeyed that is became the basis justifying rabbinic Judaism. Okay? You want to keep that in mind because I have received a comparison to say, you know, how is it different to say you can disregard one of Yahweh's instructions on food, and the rabbi saying, we can disregard anything that God says that we don't like and make it something that we do like. And my response to that is, first of all, be very careful. If you're going to associate someone that's part of the covenant family who is exposing and condemning all religions with religion, you're going to make them mad. So be very careful in that comparison. Second, what I would say is that there's an enormous difference between disregarding an instruction regarding a specific behavior, like don't pick up six on the Shabbat. of disregarding and say it's okay to pick up sticks on the spot. In fact, it's good to pick up sticks on the spot. We should all kindle fires on the Shabbat. We should all gorge ourselves with camel. Now, if you were saying that, that would be like rabbinic Judaism. No, it doesn't matter what God said. What we say, even though it's entirely different, that's golden. So the comparison between the two is not sound. But let's go one step further. At no time is trying to understand the reason that God has shared an instruction with us. At no time is that search for meaning, as I shared with you earlier, on what the boar means, and in this context, what I think the boar means, why there is an encouragement to refrain from the habitual eating of boar. And I shared the three or four things that are associated with the boar that I thought I learned from. It's one thing to say, my emphasis is learning from it, and here's what it can mean, and may mean to you, and here's what it means to me, and saying that the instruction is wrong. Now, I'm saying exactly the opposite. I'm saying this instruction, for all but 50 of the last 6,000 years, was life and death. It was a righteous instruction, man, because of all the parasites associated with boars. But I'm also saying, here's why the boar was picked. This is what it represents in religion. And it's a seminal animal in religion. This is what it represents. And it's another thing to understand the whole attitude and nature of the digestive system and what boars do in terms of what they eat. And the ingestion of rubbish and rolling around in the mud, which boars are prone to do. That's not disregarding God's instructions. That's thinking about them, trying to understand them. The rabbinical approach was, no, we're going to say exactly the opposite. So there is no comparison there. We have to be really careful about doing that. Okay. All right, everybody, we'll go into the first eight verses.
One thing I'd like to ask you,
okay,
just off the top, wouldn't you find it more important not to twist Yahweh's words? I mean, like as an example, to take where Yahweh's talking about Easter and eating Easter ham and calling that an abomination and saying, well, you know, some guy eats a BLT, he's an abomination, I'm going to come back and I'm going to destroy him.
Yeah, that's
actually,
okay. Let me answer that, Larry. It's not actually twisting Yahweh's words. It's a bad analogy. It's a errant comparison. That's why I went and said I have a really good friend that gave me the comparison of disregarding one of Yahweh's instructions is similar to Pharisaic Judaism, where they voted out anything they didn't like from God. And that's why I said that comparison doesn't hold water. That's not a valid comparison. In your situation, they're not twisting the words of Yahweh. What they're doing is they're taking, here's what God says about consuming the Easter ham as part of that celebration of Easter, and that's an abomination. Celebrating Easter, going along with why is the ham associated with Easter?
Because Tammuz was supposedly killed by the wild boar, and
that's
you're getting
correct.
Back at the
that
boars
correct.
Of the world by eating the pig.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. And so it's this symbolism and this tie to the Babylonian religion, which has now manifest even in Christianity. It's that God is saying is an abomination.
Yeah, and by the way, you're right. Twisting words was a bad way of putting, using verse snippets out of context. That's what I should have said. But
Okay. It is. It's an out of context response, which means that it's not a valid comparison. You occasionally, having on a lazy summer afternoon a baby back rib is not comparable to God's frustration with somebody celebrating a pagan religious rite with a pagan prescribed meal. Your situation has nothing to do with religion. And so you can't call what you did and have done an abomination. That's, the comparison is invalid because the comparison was taken out of context. Okay.
Well, we could get into 100 of these things. I could ask people, have you ever had sex out of marriage?
Yeah.
Anybody? Anyone?
Ever?
Huh?
Anybody ever?
Am I the only one?
Yes. Ever picked up a stick on the Sabbath? Ever kindled a fire on the Sabbath? Ever failed to bring your lamb into your home 4 days before Passover?
Yeah, I've never brought a lamb into my home 4 days before Passover. What about that?
Yeah, that's the instruction.
Huh?
From my perspective, if you understand why the lamb was brought in 4 days before Passover, and
you understand
why the lamb was slain before the family.
Yeah.
And by the way, if any of you out there want to follow the Torah perfectly, you need not only to bring in a live lamb into your home 4 days before Pesach, you need to slaughter it before your whole family. And by the way, if anyone finds out that you did that, you'll be arrested.
And what about the Lowy? Don't they have to be there to officiate?
Well, the Lowy have to officiate in terms of taking the blood of the sacrificial lamb and sprinkling it on the mercy seat.
Where's the mercy seat?
I know where it is, but I can't.
I mean, I do.
I'm neither Lowy nor
here.
Right, of course. We do. That's right. Okay, lots of things, and we're going to find out that there's several instructions just in the food instructions, the first set of them, that I'll dare anyone to figure out how to observe. Okay? So let's jump into it. By the way, and the one overwhelming positive thing about this is that even at the end of it, if someone chooses to disagree and they still want to be obedient, I'm not going to argue with them. But it is really important for us at every opportunity to try to understand what the Creator of the universe had to say to us. And so there is all gain by understanding the difference between a religious interpretation and an understanding evaluation of Yahweh's testimony and a desire to know genuinely what did he say and why did he say it. And Yahweh, we all know him, spoke to, sharing the word with, Wadabar Yahweh El, Moshe, and with Aaron. Moshe means the one who leads away. Leads away from what? Religion, politics, militarism, jaundiced economic schemes. He's the one that led the children of Israel away from Egypt, which represents those things. And Aaron, you know what Aaron means, Larry? It's not something that's commonly known. It means enlightened.
Aaron,
enlightened free will.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, enlightened free will. Aaron means enlightened free will. Okay, so these are really two great names. The one who leads away from, and we can put it in context, the crucible of human religious and political oppression. And enlightened free will. Communicating to them, La Amar, speak to, sharing the word with, the children of Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael, the sons of, and Hebrew is a language where son and daughter are uniquely different, and there really isn't a word for children without a male or female connotation to it. So it's typically, in this case, just translated to children of Yisrael, which means men and women, young and old, all of us who have chosen to engage and endure with God. to affirm that this is the life which beneficially you should consistently eat. Okay, it's the first word that requires a choice here is chaya. It's very similar to haya. The only difference between chaya and haya, chaya being the basis of Yahweh's name, meaning to exist, to be. Chaya, it, rather than having the soft hay, has the harder CH sound, is how it begins. So it's chaya versus haya. You know, when you see around particularly Jewish women, the one letter that they, Hebrew letter that they have around their neck, is almost always the che, which means life. That's the word that's used here. It is almost always rendered animal, and it can mean animal, because an animal is a form of life. And so you can render it animal, but the word basically means life. So to affirm that this is the life from which beneficially, men ashar, you should actually and consistently eat a call. Now, why did I translate call actually and consistently eat? You should genuinely consume on an ongoing basis. You have any idea how the verb, a call, was written in terms of stem and conjugation?
Your bailiwick, not mine.
Okay.
Go ahead. Tell us why.
A call, as is the case with every verb in this entire instruction, as is the case with every verb in the seven instructions on the second of the two tablets, was written in the imperfect. Every single verb is written in the imperfect. What does the imperfect mean? Behavior that is ongoing. Behavior that is habitual. Behavior that is continual without ceasing.
Maybe that's why Moshe could jump down and kill two people and still be.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, he actually killed two guys that were picking on a Hebrew slave.
Yep. That's why, because he didn't, after that, he didn't kill.
He wasn't riding around being a murderer, but he did do it, didn't he?
Yep. Yeah, you were at one time, were in the military, weren't you, Larry?
Yes, I was.
Are you still in the military?
No, I'm not.
Larry, one time in your life, you were not just a political operative, you actually worked as the head, a campaign head,
yes,
of a presidential candidate, right?
Yes, I did.
Are you still active in politics?
No, I'm not.
Okay. When I mentioned the baby back ribs and BLT or pepperoni pizza that you have on occasion, is it something that you do with regularity, or is it on occasion?
It's not a mainstay of my diet. I mean, you look in my refrigerator, you're going to find blueberries, bananas, strawberries. I use filtered water. I don't know what more I can. I use pink salt as Himalayan salt. I'm pretty good eater, really.
Okay. Yeah. Good. All right. So, none of those GMO foods in Larry's so funny. I won't.
No, they're probably all GMO.
I know. I don't know
how to get around that one.
I've got to have some fun. All food is GMO. Okay, so the key here is that Yahweh used the imperfect because we're imperfect. It's the same reason that he used the imperfect in every one of the seven instructions on the second of the two tablets. Don't make a practice of killing. Don't make a habit of bearing false witness. Don't make a habit of ignoring the Shabbat. We're not perfect.
I think he's practically talking about jobs in some cases even. I mean, it is a habit of.
Don't make a practice of. Don't do it on an ongoing basis.
I just don't know about perfect people. Yeah. You know, they can be found in churches every Sunday, I think. Shy of that. I just don't know where they exist.
Yeah, I've witnessed one and only via words, and that would be Yahusha. Dod wasn't, Moshe wasn't, Abraham wasn't. I'm certainly not. Okay, so beneficially, you should actually and consistently eat. Then he says, everyone of the domesticated and wild animals which are upon, near, or over the earth. Period. Kara 11:2. So, I want to affirm this. The life which beneficially you should actually consistently eat, every one of the domesticated and wild animals, which upon, near, or over the earth. All means all. That's all means.
Yeah, well, you know, wow. Wow. Shocking,
okay.
Isn't it?
Now, we're not going to stop there because he's got more instructions, but that's what he said. What can you eat? Every domesticated and wild animal. It's behema, which is life form, beast, livestock, herds, cattle.
You're sheep. Shaking my cat up over here. She's shaking her head.
Okay. Yep. Well, okay. You know, my only dog that I eat is hot dog. Although my dog
I'm
does
hearing
think
it.
That, yeah, my dog does think the cat is pretty nummy.
And they're Angus, right? You're eating Angus hot dogs.
When I eat hot dogs, my hot dogs are, and I always buy Hebrew National. I always buy beef hot dogs. It's just my thing.
I do too. I get Angus.
So,
I'm telling you.
Right. Yeah. So I buy beef hot dogs. Hebrew National, even though it pains me that they're kosher and therefore a rabbi someplace made a dime on them, but I do buy beef. Okay. All provide kol parak. All provide food. Parak here is an interesting word. Most every lexicon says that it means division. Divided as in a divided hoof. But parak was written, and every place that it appears in this food discussion, parak is written as a verb. And so my favorite source in terms of understanding Yahweh's testimony, and I used, in fact, on this particular project, I used all 20 of those that are the most of my favorites. But my favorite of the favorites is the Dictionary of Biblical Languages with semantic domains. Semantics just means linguistic
Hebrew.
Domains. Yeah, and then it's Hebrew. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So in it, the primary meaning of parak is to provide food, to offer nourishment as part of a meal. It was written in the hifl stem, which offers whereby the object participates in the action that the subject initiates, and in the participle form, which causes the verb to function as a verb and an adjective simultaneously. Okay? So, the primary definition of the word, according to the Dictionary of Biblical Languages, is to offer nourishment, to provide food. But if it's going to be viewed as an adjective, not a verb, then you can render it as split, separated. Okay. All provide food, the hoof and also the divided or split, cleft hooves. Lifting up and, as well as the lifting up and regurgitating curd, cud, I should say, as part of thy digestive process among the animals accordingly, you should actually and consistently eat. So he's saying, animals with a, so what's hoof here? Hoof is, parka, and it can mean a nail or a claw. Anything that's nailish, hoofish, or clawish at the bottom of a foot.
Mm-hmm.
So the hoof, and also the divided and split, shaka, separated into parts, cleft hooves, open or split nails and claws. So we're going to have to figure out, what is God's thing for a separated hoof? For something, where the foot is provides separation, and we're going to have to think about that here in a moment, because that's his thing, is the separated foot of the animal, whether it's a claw or a nail or a hoof. And then his other issue is cud. Now, the verb here is Allah. Allah means to lift up, to elevate. And it's then the second part of it is gera. And so you might say, boy, why would you have the verb lift up associated with chewing? But you know how an animal that's a grazing animal eats what is part of their digestive process? They first pluck the grass up, they chew it a bit, and then they swallow it, and they regurgitate it, lifting it up from their stomachs, and chew it again. That's mm-hmm. the process. Yeah. And so when I first said, you know, I'm translating this today, and I'm saying, wait a minute, why are we talking about lifting? Why is the verb Allah here, which means to lift up? And then it dawned on me. That is what, so God was actually giving a scientific explanation of what cows do and what goats do when they're in the process of cud. When they chew it, they goes down to their stomachs, it gets soaked in some digestive juices, it comes back up, and they chew it some more. And that's the whole concept of cud. So there's two things that God really seems to like here. Separation as it relates to the foot of an animal, digesting and assimilating the food in a very thorough way that's associated with being lifted up. Okay? So we can think about that mm-hmm. for a moment. Give everybody a while to think about what that means and why God has the affinity for those two things. Okay. However, these you should not eat on an ongoing basis. Lo akal, the negation of akal, which means to consume, also written in, guess what, conjugation. Perfect. So don't make a practice. So, however, these things you shouldn't make a practice of eating. These things you shouldn't eat on a regular or ongoing basis. From among those lifting up and regurgitating cud as part of the digestion process, and from food, from the hooved accordingly. So he's now said of the animals that process their food by regurgitating it and then chewing it again, and of the animals that actually have that do that, he's saying, and that have a hoof, don't eat camel. Now, we know that it's camel because it's Eth Ha Gamal. So Gamal was the Hebrew word for camel. Nobody questions it. Gamal, camel. Even sounds like camel. And it's written with the Hebrew letter that begins Sodom and Gomorrah. Gomorrah, the G for Gomorrah. It's the nastiest letter in the Hebrew alphabet. It's not the current G that is in Hebrew. This is a letter that somehow disappeared from the Hebrew alphabet, but it's the letter that was the first letter in Gomorrah. It's a very hard G. And so it's accordingly the Gamal. It's the camel. And I looked up every single lexicon. If you look for Gamal, you'll find two words, dromedary, as in camel, and camel. That's it. Or dromedary or pachyderm. I'm not sure which one is camel and which one's elephant, but it's camel, period. End of conversation. God doesn't want you to make a regular practice of eating camel. He says, because while it lifts up and regurgitates cud as part of the digestion process, it does not supply the need for nourishment with a separated hoof. Therefore, it is unclean for you. So here's the camel. It's a regurgitator.
Or something.
Yeah, it's a regurgitator, but doesn't have a separated foot. So no separated foot, even though it's a curd chewer. Yeah, it's not clean for you. In fact, it's not it for you is unclean. Is hu la tame. There, by the way, is no verb here. It's he has an unacceptable and nasty reputation. You should not approach. The only way you can get a verb here is to apply it, which happens a lot in Hebrew. But there really is no verb here. But you can define these words in two ways. Hu is he or it. La means to approach or for, and tame either means unclean or unacceptable or nastiness, just a nasty reputation. Have you ever had the opportunity to be around a camel? Ever ride a camel? Ever walk up to a camel?
Yeah, I have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple of times.
Okay. Camels have the following reputation. That doesn't mean that every camel's this way, but for the most part, they're all this way. Camels will bite you. Camels will spit at you. Camels will kick you. Camels will do everything they can to keep from doing what you want them to do. Camels
stink. Yeah, they're pretty nasty beasts.
Stink to high heaven. Sure, you approach a camel, and it's not going to work out good for you. They just have a nasty reputation. So God is saying, okay, this animal stinks. This animal has a nasty reputation. Don't approach it. Don't consume it. And, oh, by the way, my issue with it is its foot is not separated. All right, so let's begin to think about why the separated foot means something. Yahweh is constantly telling us to walk away from, in fact, the first condition of the covenant, walk away from Babylon, walk away from your country. Walk to me. Where do we walk?
Separates light from darkness.
Right. We walk on our feet. He's talking about, I want you to consume that which separates you by way of your walk. So I'm going to give you a list of things, and I'm going to tell you that one of the two things that I like is a foot which is separating, so that you come to understand that I want you to walk in such a way that separates you from nastiness, that separates you from that which is unclean, which separates you from that which has a bad attitude. I can learn a lot from that. Walk away from that which is repulsive, unclean, has a nasty attitude and reputation. Don't approach those things. Walk away from them. Separate yourself from them. We can learn a lot from why the separated hoof. That's what he's talking about. So the camel had no problem with the camel. It was regurgitating its food, and it was really chewing it down and digesting wholesome food. But its foot wasn't separating. Do you know the number one animal mentioned in the Quran? The camel.
The camel.
What's the number one sacrifice made to Allah in the Quran?
Camel. Camel.
Camel. What is the religion most opposed to Yahweh?
Islam.
Yeah. What religion
and they
has
don't
the nastiest?
Eat pork, by the way.
Yeah. What religion has the nastiest reputation?
Islam.
Muslims. Yeah, Islam. So can we learn something from this? Absolutely. But by the way, If I were you, I would have refrained from approaching camels, and if I'm going to refrain from eating camel. Okay.
I noticed the smell. And by the way, I've seen pictures of them having their big dinners, and they got this big dead camel there surrounded by bananas and all kind of. And I, these sheiks, I'm just sitting there going, it looks awful.
I know. It's just repulsive. And Yah was saying, by the way, it's repulsive, you know. All right, so.
Yeah, it is.
Therefore, now, okay, so far we've learned something, and we found something we should refrain from approaching and eating, correct?
That's
we've
right.
learned. Okay. Now, let's go to the next one. Also, therefore, the chiffon, because while it lifts up and regurgitates cud as part of the digestion process, it does not nourish with a divided claw. He has an unacceptable and nasty reputation, so you should not approach him. Would anybody like to wager a guess as to what a chiffon is?
No, I'm not sure what it is.
Good. Join the club. I spent considerable time today trying to figure out what a chiffon is. One place it's a demand. You know what a demand is? I don't either. Another place it's a hyrax. You know what a hyrax is? I don't either. One place it's a hair. But by the way, hairs don't have divided.
It's a coon. It's a coon.
And by the way, hairs don't digest through regurgitation of cud. One of the most common guesses was a rock badger. I've never even seen a rock badger. Another was a cooney. Don't know what that is. Someone said
it's like a. I can tell you what it is. It's like a rabbit that has these like claws or hooves, if you will.
Yeah.
Known
have
for
you ever seen a jackalope?
Have
you ever seen a jackalope?
No.
Oh yeah, I have. It reminds me of a jackalope. There's a local bar and grill that I eat lunch at fairly often, once a week. Just good old boys. I like the place. And in this bar and grill, it's called the Nugget. They have on the wall a mounted trophy, and it is a genuine jackalope. A jackalope is a jackrabbit with little tiny antlers. It's as fictitious an animal as is the Naga. You know, I don't know if you were in fraternity, but when I was in a fraternity, we brought a rare and authentic Naga hide sofa into our fraternity house, and we swore up and down that no Nagas had been harmed in the production of the Naga hide sofa. For those that don't know, Naga hide was a name that somebody came up with for having a printed rubberized material woven into a fabric. I mean, so the nice thing about rotten Naga hide is you could spill anything on it. It was impervious. And we did. Okay. So the point I want to make here is there is no one has any clue. There isn't anyone who can tell you what a chiffon is. No one has a clue. Okay, so how are you supposed to avoid eating this? How are you supposed to avoid, follow this instruction? If there isn't anybody on the planet that's ever heard of a chiffon. I don't know what a daemon is, what a hyrax is, I guess people have heard of a rock badger, but rock badgers don't fit the definition. Rock badgers don't regurgitate cud. Rock badgers don't eat grass. And so it can't be a rock badger. And no one in the world knows what a tufan, wabur, or tubson, or a dassie is, which are the other guesses. So I'm here to tell you, folks, you can read this and you can learn that Yahweh is really into a divided foot, a foot that has divisions, like we have divisions between our toes, you know, between our toes and our toenails, we have separation. Yahweh likes separation as it relates to the foot because we walk away and separate ourselves from the world of human institutions, of death and dying, and unto Yahweh. I can learn that from the chiffon. I can also learn that Yahweh really seems to like the idea of thoroughly digesting wholesome food that is uplifting. I can learn that even though I haven't got a clue what a chiffon is. And if anybody tells you they know what the chiffon is, they're lying. In addition, accordingly, the Arnabeth. So the Arnabeth is also, the Arnabeth is has an unacceptable and nasty reputation. You shouldn't approach it, and it's unclean. So in addition, accordingly, the Arnabeth, because while it lifts up and regurgitates, cud is part of its digestion process, it also does not nourish with a divided claw. She is unacceptable and has a nasty reputation, so you shouldn't approach it. So I will tell you here, folks, that 90% of the lexicons that I consulted said that the Arnabeth was a rabbit, was a hare. Do you know in the fossil record how many hares there are that whose digestive process was cud eating, where they ate grass, regurgitated it, and had the kind of teeth necessary to chew it down again as cud? Do you know how many cud eating rabbits there have been in the fossil record? First of all, how many cud eating rabbits are there that are alive today?
I wouldn't know.
The answer is zero.
No idea.
Zero. Do you know how many cud-eating rabbits there are in the fossil record?
None. I'm guessing again, zero. Okay.
None.
He's not talking about a rabbit, so when they say rabbit, that's clearly wrong. Okay.
That's clearly wrong. That is clearly wrong, because there is no such thing. He's talking about it, the digestion process is cut, regurgitated, lifted up.
So
mouth, and then is chewed again and digested. That is the process that he's talking about. No rabbit ever, no hare has ever digested their food this way. So if you're going to say I'm going to obey what God said, I'm not going to eat rabbit, no hare for me. You'd be playing with your doing mental tricks with yourself. It's not rabbit. But by the way, if you were to look at an animal that's clean in the sense of, you know, it eats leaves, rabbit falls right in that category too, right? And if I were to ask you, what animal in all of the animal kingdom was created principally to be a source of food that breeds rapidly and has absolutely no defenses, what would it be?
Well, a rabbit would fit.
Yeah, the rabbit's the first thing that comes to anybody's mind. You know, why are bunnies, egg-laying bunnies, the symbol of Easter?
Because of fertility.
Right.
Yeah.
And so since Easter bunnies are and bright love eggs and the celebration of bunnies with eggs, and by the way, bunnies don't lay eggs, became the essence of the Easter celebration, I can see God saying, you know, stay away from the that Easter rabbit thing and the Easter ham thing. You really want to stay away from those things. I can see that, but he's not talking about a real live animal here. He is not talking about an animal that has ever existed on this planet. Both of the last two have never existed. And if these gives you two animals in a row that have never existed, and the first animal is well known and it's the animal most associated with the most satanic religion man has ever conceived, and that's the first one, the camel. And the next two have never existed, but one of them is associated with Easter, and as in the bunny. And the next one that he's going to mention is also associated with pagan religions, the wild boar. maybe there's a different way to approach this. Maybe the whole story here is about the story that I'm repeating and I'm telling you about is I want you to very thoroughly be nourished by what you eat. I want you to look at the animals that I'm describing here that eat a very wholesome, grain-oriented, plant-oriented diet that are extraordinarily thorough in their consumption of these things, and that their whole digestive system is about lifting you up. Because if we apply that to the Torah, we're going to digest every word. We're going to chew on every nuance. We're going to bite into it with all that we have. We're going to swallow it whole after we have savored every last morsel of it. Pretty darn good way to look at how to observe the Torah. And then we're going to prioritize feet that separate so that we walk away from a human institution. I can learn both of those from these from the Chiffon and from the Arnabeth. But I'm telling you, folks, there has never been a Chiffon. There is no Arnabeth. And God's not stupid. God knows what he's talking about. He created every animal. All right, and therefore, also, the wild boar, the chasseur, the wild boar, because while it does nourish with a hoof and also has a divided cleft or an open hoof, but it does not lift up and regurgitate cud as part of the chewing and grinding process. He is an unacceptable and nasty in his reputation and is unclean and you should not approach. Stay away from the wild boar.
That is almost humorous. That, I mean, honestly.
It is. It's
the way
humorous.
That has just been laid out. You know, Yahweh's got a sense of humor.
That's what it strikes me, man. You start
you might
with the
camel, want to throw in
which is the basis of Islam,
well.
And then you go from there to the basis of the Babylonian religion, and in between you have two non-existing creatures, so that the only thing you can glean from it is the advantage of having a foot that separates and being thoroughly nourished.
Yeah, and again, you might want to throw in unicorns there, since the KJV has those as well.
So then it goes on to say, from these creatures, these living things, this flesh, this body, this skin or meat, you should not continuously eat lo akal. Don't make a habit of eating arnabeths and chiffons, okay, or wild boars or camels. So don't make a habit of eating anabeths or chiffons, gamels or chasseurs, wild boars.
That's like calling their religion a fantasy.
Yeah. From these creatures, you should not continuously eat, not consume them on an ongoing basis. And with their carcasses, you should not make a habit of touching. They are unclean. With their carcasses, you should not touch. In other words, carcass is their corpse. It's, what he's saying is that there's the stench of death associated with these things. You associate with the animal that became synonymous with Islam, that stinks to high heaven, that's got a really crappy attitude, mean attitude, that bites. You associate with that that doesn't properly digest its food, that doesn't really thoroughly consume what it's being served and is nourished with, that which is uplifting. You associate with feet that don't separate you, and you associate with that old wild boar that was the basis of Christianity and the Babylonian religion. You associate with it, and their carcass, bad things are going to happen. Don't touch it. Stay away from that. That's the corpse's death. Don't make a habit. It's unclean. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, you're actually observing Torah here, though, so this is not just a list of do's and don'ts to you.
No, yep. That's right.
Actually, so, take some thought.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's well, we have 10 minutes left in the program, but that is the by the way, from here, then we go into creatures and the water, and he talks about gills, and I just ran out of time. And since
we don't get into. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say so. I'm not here to. While shrimp are not listed and clams are not listed and lobsters not listed specifically, you know, they live in the water and they don't have gills. They have a different method of extracting oxygen from the water. But I've always viewed it as that Yahweh's explanation of them was that everything in the list that didn't have gills, with exception by God delineating things, you know, this is not good for you to eat if it didn't have a gill. The one example of something with a gill that's not good, I don't think is good, as a catfish, because it is also a bottom feeder. It eats trash. But and I know a lot of people like catfish, and it wouldn't be prohibited. But most everything else, clams, oysters, or filter fish. If a sea animal fish dies, the first on the scene to, like the vultures, are shrimp. They consume death. So the sea creatures.
They're like the little clerics of the underworld.
Right. Yeah, they are. They consume death. They feed on death. And so I always looked at it as that's what God is telling me. Is, you know, if you consume rubbish, if you feed on death, if you're nourished by that which is deadly, it's not healthy for you. And it's also true that for 6,000 of probably 50 years shy of 6,000 years of man's existence, those shellfish were the most likely to make you sick. Just like
bacteria,
most likely, was most likely to make you sick. So that's how I viewed them, we're all Yah's children. We've all been given brains and a nesama to exercise good judgment, and you can think about it. Now, I am not going to tell anyone that they should follow Larry's example. I'm not going to tell anybody they should follow my example. I'm not worthy to be followed. I'm not going to pretend that Larry or I are the smartest guys in the room, and therefore have a superior understanding of who Yahweh is and what he's saying here. I will tell you that Dode is the smartest man in the room, by far. And I'm going to tell you that Dode didn't fixate on this. He fixated on learning and understanding. His approach is the same as the approach that I've taken here. If your approach to Yahweh's Torah is consistent with Dode's, you might not be right, but you aren't going to be very wrong. It's about as foolproof as you can go. So this is the approach that I take to everything in the Torah. It doesn't make me right. I'm an extremist in this view. I'm dodish in this view, in the sense that I'm not fond of rules and authority. I've always chafed against authority. I've always gone outside the lines.
And again, that was continually, constantly, blah blah blah. You know, one of the things that Yahweh was aware of was that, you know, Larry was going to live in Babylon, and Craig, and any number of other people, you know, in the course of our lives, day-to-day lives, we would have to be in touch, in contact with the swine of the world. He knew it.
Yeah. Just that don't make practice of it. You know, it was the ultimate release for me when I finally realized that the 7 instructions on bearing false witness, on killing, on adultery, were written
in such a
way. It
was an ongoing affair.
Yeah, it's ongoing practice. You know, if you were still in the military and it was your business to kill, that'd be a problem. If you were engaged in an adultery on an ongoing basis, that'd be a problem. God's not going to be happy with that. If you were consistently slandering and bearing false witness, God's not going to be happy with that. Now I'm going to tell you that, well, I cannot think of a specific situation here where I have borne false witness. I'm going to tell you there's probably nothing that I'm accused more of than bearing false witness. And I am certain that I'll go a step further here. If my wife asks me a question where the truth is not a good answer, I'm not going to give her the truth. You know, if my wife says, make my butt look too big? If you think I'm going to say yes, if it does, you're nuts. You know? There are times where I'm going to bear false witness, and I'm not going to do it habitually. But I'm going to give, in many cases, I'm going to give my wife the answer that is best for our relationship. Now, my wife happens to be really trim, so I gave a really lousy example. But there are questions that she asked me.
You're a smart man.
You know, for example, my wife will say, there's a movie that she wants to go see. I have no interest. And my wife will say, do you want to go see the movie? Absolutely. Yes, I want to go see the movie. Because if I answer, no, I don't, but I know it would make you happy if I did, so I'll go. Man, that is really going to piss her off.
Yeah, it's not best for the relationship. I believe
no.
I figured that one out.
Right.
I'll even go see a chick flick. I mean,
right. But does it
Child,
does,
Sex
yes.
in the City or something? I mean,
But that does not mean that I'm consistently bearing false witness, because that's not what God's talking about.
No.
He's talking about corrupting his testimony in a meaningful way to lead people astray. Cheating people because you've deliberately deceived them. That's what he's talking about.
Yeah, wouldn't you say
that
wouldn't you say using a verse snippet to say anybody that ate a BLT was an abomination would be changing the nature of Yahweh and thus leading people astray?
It's certainly taking a statement out of context. That's what got Yahweh in trouble.
I think
it changes
Yahweh's very nature. There's a lot going on here that I had to stand up to, and I just don't appreciate that. I really don't. I'm sure he doesn't either.
We're out of time, and as I say, this is the most challenging subject of all for me. I do want to leave that the idea that as members of Yahweh's covenant family, we ought to err on the side of being supportive and nice to one another. And the thing that we should avoid doing is offering comparisons that try to associate something that somebody is doing with either a religion or an abomination. I received an email from from someone I've really come to love, and I didn't like the comparison that was in the email. But what I wrote back was, well, I don't agree with the comparison. I agree with the person, and I'm the relationship with that individual means a great deal to me. And so I said, I'm not going to express any anger here. And I hope that the fact that I just disagree with your comparison, that none will be returned. And I already received an email from him. He says, that's exactly the way that it should be. So, was a lot said. I hope it was productive for people. We didn't do the 119th Psalm, although we referred to it today. An important subject, and I would encourage everyone to develop their own understanding. I've shared mine regarding the instructions on the Shazir, the Arnabeth, the Shafan, and the Gamal. And I would encourage you to think about it yourself. I think that's really what God wants after all. It's spend the time with him. Analyze the words. Think about what they mean. I think we can all
observe the Torah.
Yeah, observe. Absolutely. All right. Well, I've enjoyed talking about my second least favorite subject. As much as I can enjoy it, it has me right on edge all the time. And I'm going to end with this thought. The reason it has me on edge all the time is that my overwhelming instinct, based upon Yahweh as the Father of the Covenant and me as a zealous, passionate, flawed child who has been given so much from this relationship and has been liberated in this relationship, is to view everything that he has shared as informative, as educational, as guidance. And that's the way I view it. And so I'm always, but that said, that does not mean that I would tell anybody to deliberately ignore, change Yahweh's instructions and to habitually do things that he says, you know, you ought not do that. So I'm not encouraging anyone to eat Arnabeth or Shazir or Chiffon. I'm not telling any. In fact, I would discourage you eating Chiffon and Arnabeth and Shazir as well as Gamal. Folks, I think that if we prioritize learning why he gave us this whole instruction on uplifting meals that are thoroughly digested and feet which separate, I think we can learn a lot more and gain a lot more than if we try to figure out what an Annabeth is. All right, Larry, thank you for setting the agenda.
Break that down. Yeah, no, you actually have set the agenda with there was an actual challenge thrown out there, and you know, I don't take to people throwing out challenges when they use verse snippets in the wrong way lightly, and you know, I have a tendency to bite back just a little bit. And by the way, I don't find it appealing, although you don't mind, to drag you into it. It has nothing to do with you. And I'm just, I can't understand why anybody would need to attack anyone who spends so much time sharing Yahweh's words at their base root and the meanings, and sharing with us, uncorrupted. You know, you'll be the first to admit that languages are imperfect tools, but
and I'm an imperfect witness to the language. And all I can say is that I'm doing my best to try to understand.
I just don't know why anybody would even spend their time attacking you over it. I just don't get it. I don't understand it. It has nothing to do with you. You probably would have been a lot kinder with them than I was. Believe me.
Maybe, but you know, the reality here, Larry, is that when people, and in this case, the criticism of me was not brought to my attention, and therefore, you know, I'm isolated and insulated from the criticism, but I don't take it well. And it's not because I think I'm right. It's not because I think I know better. I don't take it well because they're doing what we're doing here makes a person extraordinarily vulnerable. When you when you're willing to publish your translations and your interpretations of what they mean, and you're willing to share them verbally in these kinds of forums, for today will be 5 hours worth of that today, you're going to make mistakes. And if somebody wishes to attack you for every mistake that you make, or even infer that you've made mistakes because they differ, it's going to wear thin. And that which is fun is going to turn negative. And I'm just not going to do it. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not a threat. You know, I'm not going to run away. I'm just going to return to something that is more productive and more fun, which is more translations and more writings, more books, and fewer of this, which is far more vulnerable. than the writing in the books.
And that's, again, when you know, as a family member, you know, and you know, I view you as a friend, and I view you as family. And if I don't care if it's you or if it's Steve Paul or whether it's Cherie, I don't really care, or Lisa B, if they're being attacked, guess who's going to jump in there if I see it?
Yeah, I because do the same thing.
I don't appreciate family being attacked by people with religious notions.
Well, when they,
I just don't appreciate it.
And perhaps the person doesn't have a religious notion, but they're applying a religious notion to us. And that's a very hurtful thing to do. It's a hurtful. It's hurtful, mm-hmm. And that's my hot button. And so I would probably react.
Well, perhaps they don't have a religious notion, but they might want to look up Torah doesn't mean law.
Yeah.
And the Shem roots don't mean do and keep.
Right. If somebody wants and they feel more comfortable being directed and obedience to Yahweh, and they feel more comfortable being directed in this way, there are lots of people who have written books and do programs on how to keep the Torah as a set of rules. And I don't think they'll find satisfaction there, but there are people that are going to do that. I'm not one of them. And, you know, you need to know that right out the chute my proclivity here, my focus, my perspective is that Torah means teaching, direction, and guidance, and Shamar means to observe in the sense of closely examining and carefully considering. And that the collection of the combination of that is BN, which means we make connections so that we understand. That's the mindset that I see presented here. And that's the mindset I'm going to share. That doesn't mean that other mindsets and other perspectives are invalid, but that's the only one that I can share.
Well, you just shared one tonight with the mythical creatures. puts it up with the creatures that actually represent mythical religions.
Right.
It was beautifully.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, it was actually almost humorous.
And then
to find rabbis make an eating law out of it. And by the way, good Muslims won't eat pork. Are they closer to Yahweh than say you are? I don't think so.
No. And I want to tell you, Larry, that when I was asked by you to do this program on this, I've been on edge ever since you asked for it, because this is really uncomfortable, because I don't want anyone to say that I'm telling people to disregard God's testimony, but that's really uncomfortable for me. I hate it. And so I did not approach this with, I embraced this with open arms and enthusiasm, but when I got into it and I realized, wow, there's only two things that are being repeated here. Two things. The thorough digestion, the consuming that in things in such a way that they're uplifting and thoroughly digested, and feet that separate, a walk that separates. And I'm saying, man, I can relate to that. That is right up God's power alley. Then all of a sudden I'm saying, wow, there's a reason that we've been directed to this. We can learn from this. And then when I find that two of the beasties are associated with the two most troublesome religions in the world today. One of them is with Christianity because of the wild boar and the son of the sun and Easter and all that sort of thing and Lent. And the other one's with Islam and the camel. And the other two are just mythical creatures for mythical religions. All of a sudden I'm saying, okay, God's consistent. If you open your eyes and you think about it, everything he has to say is consistent, and we can learn from it. And he has a way of turning something that you're dreading into something that was fun. When I found that the Shafan doesn't exist and the Arnabath, the cud-chewing rabbit, has never existed, I said, okay, I get the picture here. That was fun. All right, with that thought,
well,
my
that is fun.
It's fun.
Absolutely beautiful.
It turned out, it turned out to be fun.
I'm glad you did it, and I understand that a lot of times, too, that you think that I've been pulled into something. I've not been pulled into anything that I don't choose.
Oh, no, I yanked you into it. It's you bore the stripes here because I asked you these questions, and I asked them for the purpose of showing that you're not perfect, and that occasionally you will do things that are in conflict with what Yahweh says, and as do I, and it's not our perfection that matters. What matters is our willingness to embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant, and to observe the Torah, because it's the only place where those terms and conditions are delineated, and we should focus on knowing Yahweh and understanding what he's offering so we can respond appropriately. I ask those questions to emphasize that and to associate it with Dod, who did those very things. And so I was the one who exposed you to the criticism. And I apologize to you for that.
Don't worry about it.
You were happy to be in that position.
It didn't bother me a bit. I think the only thing that bothers me is that people trying to turn Yahweh's words into a list of rules and regulations.
Yeah.
And
bothers
that,
me a
you
lot,
know,
too.
And for that, there's plenty of religious websites, as you said,
yep,
that you can go out there and you can learn from rabbis and everything
right
else, and they'll be
yep
happy to march you right down the rabbinical road to nothing.
The dominant portion of the Talmud, of the oral law, is to make a religion out of these instructions on the Arnabeth, the Shazir, and the Shafan.
Well,
you know?
Have at it. I'm not doing that.
I'm not going there. No, I'm not going there either. But I can promise you that I am not having Shafan for dinner tonight.
Yeah, I guess you can.
But I may go and see if I can rustle up some wild Annabeth.
There you go.
Just a little yard.
I've actually got Yaldajun flying in from New York tonight.
Good for you.
This was lovely. She gets there. And, you know, I've specifically told Yalda never to become an American citizen.
Right.
And so, you know, she was over at her mom's for 4 months here, you know, or five
wow
months here.
And where did her mom live?
Shiraz, Iran.
Oh, wow.
That's the old capital of Iran. 100 years ago,
wow,
they moved it over to Tehran.
Wow.
Known for wine and poetry and song, not a religious city, so they get kind of backhanded over there. But when she comes into the U.S., the first thing they tell her is that you've been out of the country too long with a green card. She goes, look, I own a business here. I've been married 10 years, you know. my husband has some pretty strong credentials with the military and named them off
right
to him, as a matter of fact.
Right.
And then the guy lightened up then, let her in. Then she finds out that they booked her from New York, from JFK, all the way over to Newark. So she has to go all the way over to Newark, and then she gets there with a ticket in her hand. They tell her she has no ticket. She goes, what's this in my hand? So
wow
she has to argue for 15 minutes with them. And, you know, there was a time when you flew on an airline, they treated you like royalty.
Yeah, and now
you
fly on an airline.
You know, the government's involved in every aspect of it. You're treated like garbage. It's
yep
just, I don't like
yeah
to fly.
Since 9/11, the involvement of the U.S. government in flying and their influence over the airlines has turned what used to be an experience you look forward to one that you absolutely dread. Expensive and inefficient and miserable because of the government involvement.
Well, it's like they both tried to hold her up. One wanted more money for a ticket when she had the ticket in her
right
hand
right
to get down here to Jacksonville. You know, and the yeah other guy asked her, how much money you got on you? The guy was saying he wouldn't let her in. She said, what does that have to do with it?
Yeah. Yeah, really.
Now, you know, I mean, they're holding people up as they come into the country now?
Yeah.
Whoa.
There you go.
I mean, that's what it sounds like to me. Why would you want to know how much money a person has on them?
because they want to control everything.
No, she told him, I've got $135. It's traveling money to eat with. He said, why so little?
Because I have this magical thing. It's called a credit card.
Yeah, she pulled out four cards.
Yeah. Yeah, I carry
credit cards. These are bank accounts.
Yeah, I do. I have three credit cards with me. Always one check, three credit cards. And at any one time, it is very rare that I will have more than $150 in cash. And most of the time, I've got less than
cash?
$10 to $15 in cash.
Yeah, sometimes I don't have money in a wallet for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
I just for the life of me, couldn't believe that. Anyway, that's what's going on now.
Unbelievable. My wife flies commercial, and she hates it. It's always a disaster. And I will occasionally fly commercial, but mostly fly my own airplane. And you can hear my dog is saying, I know you're talking about Annabeth. I love Chiffon and Annabeth. And I want to have some. I want a dead Annabeth in my bowl tonight. You put a dead animal in my bowl. So my dog is screaming at me. All right. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.